lies waiting in the bay.
Welcome to another edition of Ireland Calling, which is brought to you with great support of the Hugh Green Group. You're listening to the show in Ireland, beautiful to hear, on Planet FM, Wednesday, Plains FM in Christchurch on Saturday, Cappie Coast and Wellington Access Radio on Sunday. Greetings to everybody listening on Planet Audio across New Zealand and other parts of the world. Started the show tonight with Paddy Riley and the Fields of Athenry. It's a bit cool over there, but the days are extended a little bit over in Ireland at the moment. And we're going to go straight into our next song, which is Seamat. And she's, what do you call it, wondering where are your kids tonight? And throughout the program tonight, we bring you all the latest news from Ireland. I've got an interview with Brent Pope. Brent, former Otago rugby player and coach and commentator in Ireland, back in New Zealand. So we had a chat to him about Six Nations and who he thinks will be the next All Black coach. I will play that interview throughout the program tonight. But as I said, up first tonight, Seamat, and where are your kids tonight?
I watch myself.
welcome back. You're listening to Ireland Calling, brought to you with the support of the Hugh Green Group. I see the breaking news out of Ireland this evening as a man in his 20s that has been arrested on suspicion of the murder of Daniel Arbose. This was a young boy who disappeared. Well, it was only discovered in August last year that he disappeared about 3 years before that, and his partial remains of his body were found in an area north of Dublin, and a woman, believed to be his mother, has been helping police with inquiries of the Gardaí, and we know that this man that's been arrested today had been living overseas. So that's the breaking story coming out of Ireland this evening. Well, she was odds on favourite to become the next president of Ireland, Mairead McGuinness, but she had to withdraw abruptly due to health reasons in August last year. And of course, we know what happened with the presidential campaign. It was a bit of disaster for Fianna Fáil and not much better for Fine Gael. And but Mairead gave a first interview at the weekend and said she was disappointed, but she had certainly serious health issues, but she's thankfully recovered now. And she said the diagnosis came out of the bolt out of the blue and knocked her sideways, and she was advised to pull out of the campaign and to take rest for a number of months. So she did that, and she said was hard at the time because she knew she had a great chance of becoming the president. But of course, she withdrew. Fine Gael co-opted on a good friend of mine, Heather Humphreys, and Heather was the Fine Gael candidate, and she came second in a two-horse race because the third horse didn't make it to the start line, Fianna Fáil's candidate, Jim Gavin. And up there on the hair now, Catherine Connolly, she had her first state visit to Northern Ireland last week, and we'll come back and have a chat about her visit. I can play this song called The Town I Love So Well from Luke Kelly.
In my see the town that I have loved so well, where our school played ball by the gas yard wall, and we laughed through the smoke and the smell. Going home in the rain, running up the dark lane, past the jail and down behind the fountain. Those were happy days in so many, many ways, in the town I loved so well. In the early morning, the shirt factory horn calls the women from Craigan, the Moor, and the Ball, while their men on the dole play the mother's role. Then the children and then train the dog. And when times got rough, there was just about enough, but we saw it through without complaining. For deep inside was a burning pride in the town was music there in the dairy, like a language that we all could understand. There I learned about life, and I found a wife in the town I love so
Luke Kelly, whose anniversary occurred just over 2 weeks ago. We played that song, The Town I Loved, so well for everybody from Derry listening tonight. And as I mentioned before, that song, Catherine Connolly went to visit Northern Ireland last week, and she had a 3-day visit. She met people from all communities and had speeches in Belfast and in Derry. And after her speech in Derry on the Thursday, she was accosted, well, not accosted, approached by Democratic Unionist MP Gregory Campbell, and told her she was welcome to his country and she was welcome to Londonderry. And in the 13 or 14 references she made to Derry during her speech, she didn't mention Londonderry one. So this caused all kinds of confusion. And of course, officially, if you look up any map, it's Londonderry, but everybody knows it's Derry, and it's the Derry football team, it's the Derry football soccer team, it's the city of Derry Airport, and it's the apprentice voice of Derry. But of course, Campbell was trying to, what you call it, gain a few points. And but the discussion between the two of them went well, and she said she was, open to dialogue. She came from a family of 14. She was well used to debate. But it certainly probably overshadowed a very successful visit up there. Breaking the story out of Ireland this evening, I see where a young American man has been, in court today. It's probably going to take 3 days, and he's probably going to be not charged with murder. This young man had serious health issues, and he had come to Ireland and He had been diagnosed as with bipolar a number of years before that, after his father flew over to be with him in Ireland, and they went down to a five-star hotel in County Leash called the Ballyfin Denise Hotel. And he had a psychotic episode where he killed his father, which is his father. So the court case is due to continue for 3 days, but it looks like he'll be found not guilty as a result of being insane. Scheme came out today, Minister for Justice came out to say that people that were injured in the open fire at the Stardust dance facility in Dublin back in February 1981, in which 48 people died, many more injured, 200 others injured, and they have been awarded compensation of €20,000. And a solicitor acting for the survivors said the scheme to compensate them has been a very disappointing development. And so that was an awful night. I remember I just was working in Dublin at the time and came home on the Friday night. And the news broke on Saturday morning that this terrible fire had happened, and so many people died. In fact, it was only last year that the government officially apologised for all the mistakes that were made. Right, let's take Only a Woman's Heart and Eleanor McAvoy. Yes, one of the biggest selling the singles back in 1992 from an album called Bringing It All Back Home. That's Only a Woman's Heart by Eleanor McAvoy. Well, we change tack for a minute. We go and we'll play this interview that I recorded yesterday with Brent Pope. Brent back in New Zealand. Brent played for the Otago team in his day and an All Black trialist, and then went on a season to play initially, forced him into Ireland in the early 90s, and stayed over there, was involved as a player coach for many years, and then did 25 years as a pundit. And we basically started off having a chat about Ireland's loss in the Six Nations match against France the other night.
Well, you're quite right in your prelude to it. You know, Irish rugby has enjoyed a kind of a real renaissance since when I first commentated, when it was very much the fourth or fifth biggest sport in the country behind GAA and football, as you know. But then it sort of had a resurgence over the last maybe decade, and it first started under Joe Schmidt and then continued where they were regular favourites for the Six Nations as it was then. And also, I think they went into the two last World Cups, either ranked one or two in the world. So that's the level they were at. They had this historic wins over the All Blacks, which I never thought I'd see in my lifetime, in Chicago starting, and then the series went out here. And then for the last year or so, we've just seen a bit of a malaise. There's just something wrong with this Irish team at the moment, Ollie. You know, it's not that they were beaten, it's how they were beaten. How they were beaten in Chicago, how they were beaten by South Africa, and how they were beaten by France. That is the concern. And I think something's got to change, because Ireland, you would have said, had a really good tilt at next year's World Cup, but you would look at it differently now and say, we've got to get more strength and depth in certain positions. And I think that showed against France, that, you know, that Ireland can at least afford to have five or six of their front liners out, because some of them are getting a bit old now. And like Josh van der Flier, for instance, is one player, World Player of the Year a few years ago. He really was anonymous the other night, and there's a bit of a kind of a, there's a bit of, a lot of players are out of form, not just one or two, a lot of players are out of form, and that's the bit of the concern moving forward. Do they have the stocks and the props? Do they, who's the scrum half to take over after Casey, or who's the third scrum half? Who's the third out half? They don't know who their out half is now, given Prendergast's game last week. So there's a lot of jiggery pokery that has to occur. Yes, they'll fight back. I'm sure they'll beat Italy this week, but I think there's a few problems in the camp, you know.
But they're playing not too much rugby. You mentioned Josh Dunapier. I heard Mike Ross analysing the game at the weekend, and a lot of these guys, that were picked for the Lions, they had nearly 14 months continuous rugby, and they're playing too much rugby at the top level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I foresaw this. I said, look, Ireland are going to struggle in this year's Six Nations because of the players that went away on the tour, which is usually their rest period. You know, even the fact that Farrell coached that team gave an indication to the other unions about how Ireland played, because as a coach, you can't change things automatically. Like, you know, Farrell bought his whole Irish coaching ticket with him. So when they were talking about defence, and that they would have been saying, this is the way we play out in Ireland, this has been successful. So roll around to the next Six Nations, teams have Irish rugby worked out now. You saw last week in France, when it didn't work, the high ball, the kicking game didn't work for Ireland, and then they didn't really have a plan B. It didn't look like that. They only looked like the only way they were going to score a try was the way that they scored it, in close, you know, battering, getting over the line. But, you know, it was France that was playing all the attacking rugby, and I think Ireland need to come up with another way of playing, because two or three years ago they had a distinct way of playing. The way they played the game, they used the likes of Bundiaki and McCoskey and that to go up over the centres. They had, you know, good wings, they had a good kicking game, but now other teams have worked them out, Ollie. You know, it's you know, just showed in France, they shut them down pretty easily. Like, I don't think Ireland had any really significant line breaks apart from Gary Ringrose in the last 10 minutes. But other than that, it just was, nobody really performed. You know, even the players that are on the top of their game, world ranked, like Caelan Doris and Ty Byrne, they were well below their best. So something's got to change, and it's got to change pretty quickly, because before you know it, the World Cup, you'll be on us, and they need certain depth in certain positions, because if this happens in Australia where they lose a few frontline players, then you know, things are coming for them now. They never come, as somebody said in the paper, they never come. They used to be the hunters. Now they've become the hunted in the sense that teams are going after them. So, like, even Italy will come to town next week. Boy, the confidence. Okay, well, we'll beat Scotland. Let's have a real go at Ireland team. They sense a weakness and they're going after it.
Yet, despite, you know, the lack of success, both international level and indeed at the provincial level, huge crowds. Rugby is still popular. It's you know, Leinster get big crowds, Munster get big crowds, Connacht have their new stadium, and of course you cannot get a Six Nations ticket.
No, you can't, but it's become a bit like GAA, Ollie, in your day. You know, it's the only ticket in town. When these games, you can't, even the rugby people can't get tickets for it. It's very corporate now. You go to Leinster matches and there's a lot of corporate boxes, a lot of people that are going there under sort of corporate tickets and that. You know, try getting a ticket for a Six Nations game against England or something at home or even away. You don't have a dog show. But that's what a lot of people are complaining about. A lot of people at grassroots level can't sell their tickets. Of course, clubs are fought for cash, so they're selling a lot of their tickets, like Gary Owen and Mary's. They all have to sell their tickets to keep the cups going. So the people that should be supporting aren't able to go to many of the matches. So what you get is a high level of expectation. Those people go into the game, they get turned off of Ireland to lose and after half time. So in a sense, I'm not saying they're all like that, but there has been a change in the type of person that is supporting the Irish rugby team.
Right, before we take a piece of music, let's have a quick roundup of Six Nations. So even, I know one round gone, but you think Ireland will struggle against England in Twickenham and will be lucky to win the other three games. Would that be your view on it at the moment?
You know, Scotland flattered the seed and just showed last week. I think they'll knock off some team. And it might be Ireland. But I think over the last decade or so, it's really become a three-horse race, which is Ireland, England and France. I think that France away proved that a home draw is very important. But then, as you know yourself, the emotion around Ireland versus England, I could see Ireland beating England at the end of the tournament. They get all their players back. But at this stage, I'm predicting France or England first or second, Ireland third, Scotland, Italy and Wales. I think Wales don't really look to get any win against any team, and I think that Ireland will beat the other three teams. I think that they'll end up third.
Well, you're listening to Ireland Calling, and we're halfway through an interview with Brent Pope, and Brent's piece of music that he'd like to hear on the programme tonight is The Pokes and Rainy Night in Soho. And after this, we go back and hear the second part of Brent's interview, where he talks about provincial rugby in Ireland and who he thinks would be the next All Blacks coach.
I've been loving you a long time. Down all the years, down all the days, and I've cried for all your troubles. Smile, it's your funny little way. We watched our friends grow up together, and we saw them as they fell. Some of them fell into heaven, some of them fell into hell. I took shelter from a shower, and I stepped into your arms. The wind was whistling all its tune. I sang you all my sorrows. You ginger lady by my bed, covered in a cloak of silence. I'd hear you talking in my head. I'm not singing for the future. I'm not dreaming of the past. I'm not talking of the first time. I never think about the last. Now the song is nearly over. It means still there's a lot of hope for me. You're the measure of my truth, the measure of my truth.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They still have a conveyor belt. Yeah, Glints are in pretty good rude health. You'd have to say they are probably going to get to the final lease of the Heineken, well, which is the new name that the Champions Cup for the Heineken's Cup. So I'd fancy them to maybe do something in that year. It's been a long time coming. And now that teams like La Rochelle and that are out, or other big teams are playing away, Bordeaux might be a tough away match if they ever get that. But Leinster are probably going to have home matches right through to the semi-final, final. So they're in good health. I like what you said about Connacht, because I think they are going through a rebuilding phase, and they're playing a pretty good brand of rugby. Everybody likes Connacht rugby, of course, and they've got the new stadium there, got a few more bucks they've bought quite wisely given their budget, and also another couple of players joining from Leinster next year going down. I think the Irish flanker, Connors is going down there next year. So they're picking up a few players that aren't getting matches in Leinster. Ulster is coached by guy I coach, Richie Murphy. He's doing a good job there again, bringing new players through. And then we're left with Munster. And you're right, you know, even though I really rate McMillan, they're a bit up and down for me. They can play well one week and then they drop away the next week. But they'll be back. So given what's happening in Wales and what's happening in Scotland, they're in pretty good shape, the Irish provinces. I think they'll be there or thereabouts in both competitions. So things are good there. Club level, my old club, St Mary's, is leading the first division ahead of my other old club, Clontarf, by a point. So looks like they'll make the semi-finals of the All-Ireland League. And then you've got the kind of underage rugby. And unfortunately, as a sign of the times, I see that the Ireland 15, which is effectively the Ireland B side, got hammered by the equivalent to England's second team by about 50 points the other day. And that was a bit of a wake-up call that maybe these players that are coming through aren't quite at the level of the first team players. And I think that's what we're seeing in the senior game too, that we're seeing these players that are jettisoned through, like young Sam Prendergast or whatever. They've just got to give them a bit of time to develop, but they don't have a lot of time on their hands, do they? Because the World Cup's coming up in the rear view pretty quickly. So they've got to get things right. But I think, yes, I think all the provinces have reasonable seasons, even expectations. I think that the club rugby is good at the level, although they're struggling for financial backing. And then I think that he's looking to the World Cup next. I think that, you know, there's a bit of work to do before they'll be able to say, look, we're going to go in and hunt for a quarter final. Now, they're on the right side of the draw, as you know. New Zealand, the All Blacks, on the wrong side of the draw. So Ireland, I think, have a good chance to get past that sort of quarter final. Whether they're good enough to really push on and get to a semi-final, final, I don't know. A lot got to happen in the next big Grand Prix year.
Well, if you're a sporting coach and you have a 74% or 77% win record, you'd think you'd be guaranteed your job for a four-year term that you signed up to. But that wasn't good enough for the All Black coach. Incidentally, the story broke about his sacking came from an Irish Independent journalist, Rudry O'Connor. However, he got the scoop, whether Razor rang O'Gara and told him he was on the way out or something. But that was the big story here about 3 weeks ago. Now, you've been here for the last 3 weeks since Robertson was sacked, and the debate is on about who will replace him. And there's two names that have come to the fore, and you know, they were expecting to have more than two. But who is your pick of the two guys that are names are in the draw?
Well, you see, they a bit like a job street, Dolly. They when they said that, when they laid down the sort of perimeters that you had to coach an international side, that further reduced the coaches that were available. And of course, then when Joe Schmidt pulled out and then Vern Cotter pulled out, suddenly you were left with a pretty short list. And then it becomes sort of real a dangerous position, because we're left with, really, the way I see it, we're left with a straight sheet out between, I think, Jamie Joseph, who I played with, and also Dave Rennie. I think we're down to that. I think that they'll go through the process and stage if they've declared intent that they want the job, because as you know, Wayne Smith ruled himself out himself. Jerry Rock ruled himself out. You know, there would have been a pre-thought before these guys wavered themselves out of it, that they go to the next World Cup with a three head coach kind of triumphant that might include Joe Schmidt, Jamie Joseph, and so Wayne Smith, or Dave Rennie, Jamie Joseph, and Joe Schmidt, that sort of thing. But that's not going to happen. So I think we're left with a straight shootout between Dave Rennie and Jamie Joseph. And I think that the fact that if Jamie had bought Tony Brown with him, I think that he would have been odds on favourite to get the job. I think I'm sort of swaying towards Dave Rennie for some reason. I don't know why. I just think that, you know, I think that Jamie may look at it and say, look, I'm a young coach. I'm still cutting my teeth, even though he did so well with Japan. But I just want to concentrate on the Highlanders for another year. And he may look at it being a slightly poison chalice. You'd have to have pretty big, there'll be a lot of expectation on the All Blacks to perform at the next World Cup. And of course, they've got South Africa in the quarterfinal, probably. So, you know, it's a job full of expectation and full of the country saying, look, hold on, we need to get back to winning ways. We need to get back to the rugby team that we were 10 years ago. But people have got to realise that times have moved on in New Zealand, maybe, and they're not the force. They're clearly not the force they once were. You know, it's not, a lot of people aren't playing the game in New Zealand. A lot of people are leaving the country anyway. A lot of people are playing other sports, so other people don't want to play rugby every weekend and do the training. So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done in New Zealand rugby to get them back up to the standards that they seek to be. Now, if they get Richie Moana and some of these guys back for the World Cup, they'll still be in a position to be able to challenge anyone on their day, and we know that. But I don't know who the coach. But if I was a betting man, I'd say it's Dave Rennie. Now, whether they go with Rennie and Joseph, that might be a nice way of looking at it too, and that might be an option for them, but I think it'll be who those coaches are going to bring with them.
Well, the third game, whoever the new coach will be playing against Ireland here at Eden Park. Of course, the All Blacks haven't lost a game at Eden Park since 1994. Well, you're listening to Ireland Calling, brought to you with the great support of the U Green Group. Listen to us in Auckland on Planet FM, Auckland on a Wednesday night, and Plains FM in Christchurch on Saturday, Capitol Coast and Wellington Access Radio on Sunday. And as I mentioned, the program brought to you by long-time sponsor, the Hugh Green Group. And greetings to everybody listening across the globe on planetaudio.org.nz. Well, as we mentioned there, not a great weekend for Ireland on the sporting front with the disappointment in rugby. But it was a big weekend in Gaelic games. The hurling and football leagues are well underway now, and over 25,000 people turned up in Cork for the game between Cork and Tipperary on Sunday. And it was a niggly kind of a game with a player sent off from each team. But Cork, as they came out victors on this stage after the game, of course, a repeat of last year's All-Ireland final. Cork beaten Tipperary 29 points to 22. Now, this was a tag game between Wexford and Carlow, but Wexford eventual winners 2-28 to 1-21. I'm just looking here at other scores. Then on Sunday, we had Football Division 4. Waterford beat Longford. Hurling, Waterford had another win, 2 out of 3, beaten Offaly 119 to 16 points. Limerick got their campaign back on track with a win over Kilkenny, 126 to 216. And Clare, they beat Down in hurling, huge score, 335 to 15 points. And Kildare beat Antrim 321 to 20 points. Just looking here, so games coming up this weekend in football. We've got Kerry against Galway down in Alston Stack Park, Tralee, and Dublin against Monaghan, Meath against Slough, Kildare against Derry, down Westmeath, Laois, Sligo, and then we got a big game on Sunday, Donegal against Mayo, 2-2, Roscommon against Armagh, Offaly, Cork, Tyrone, Cavan, and Division 3 for Manor, Blaincare, Limerick are playing Wexford, and London in Division 4 are playing Leitrim, Antrim playing Longford, Tipperary, Carlow. So there you go, all the GAA fixtures. And if you're a subscriber to GAA Go, you can watch all those games there. Right, we move on, and we take the song from Jim McCann, a lovely song called Grace.
A few years ago, I was offered a song which I found so moving, I couldn't wait to get into a studio and record it. It's all about a young woman called Grace Gifford, who was the childhood sweetheart and for a very short period of time the wife of a poet called Joseph Mary Plunkett. I see his blood upon the rose, and in the stars the glory of his eyes. His body gleams amid eternal snows, his tears fall from the skies. Joseph Mary Plunkett was the youngest of the signatories of the Proclamation of Independence in 1916. At the age of 29, he was sentenced to death along with all the other rebels. He was shot here in Kilmainham Jail in Dublin on the 4th of May 1916 at about 6:30 in the morning. A few hours before the execution, Grace Gifford and a priest were brought in, and in a bizarre ceremony, Joseph Plunkett married Grace. They were allowed just 15 minutes together, and that was the extent of their married life. I met a lovely old lady called Miss Bridget Kelly, who was actually present at the wedding. She told me that during the young couple's final few minutes, the only item of furniture in the cell was a small stool. Miss Kelly told me that Grace sat on the stool while Joseph Plunkett knelt on the floor. I find that image very touching. Although this story is set amid the terrible events of 1916, it is, in every sense, a love song. They have told us we must yearn for liberty. Yet all I want in this dark place is to have you here with me. Oh, Grace, just hold me in your arms and let this moment linger. Take me out at dawn, and I will die. With all my love, I'll place this wedding ring upon your finger. There won't be time to share our love, for we must say goodbye. It's hard for you, my love, to ever understand the love I bear for these brave men
say goodbye. Now as the dawn is breaking, my heart is breaking too. On this May morn, as I walk out, my thoughts will be of you. And I'll write some words upon the wall so everyone will know. I loved so much that I could see his blood upon the rose. Oh, grace, just hold me in your arms. This moment linger. They'll take me out at dawn, and I will die with all my love. I'll place this wedding ring upon your finger. There won't be time to share our love, for we say goodbye. Oh, there won't be time to share our love, so we must say goodbye.
Well, that's about it for me. I'll go out tonight. Hope we have time for Gloria and One Day at a Time. For me, good night, goodbye, and God bless, and thanks for...
When you walk among